Yeah, his parents fronted him the money to invest, and he's been raising chameleon eggs ever since. Welcome back to Teacher Tales, where we give you the keys to overcoming teacher burnout to find work-life balance and educational bliss, if it still exists. On this Socratic session, me and Zeitz chat about the vital topic of integrating real-world application into education, focusing specifically on personal finance. From budgeting to investing, we explore how educators can bridge the gap between theoretical knowledge and practical skills, ensuring students are equipped to navigate the complexities of financial independence. Zeitz, welcome back.
Thank you, Tony, which is not what I call you all day, so that sounds really weird, but that's okay.
It happens all the time because, you know, as teachers, we got one name, and right. Then you have your actual name.
And then we have our other names, and yeah, so anyway. Yeah,
nobody calls me Franklin outside of...
That's so strange. Like, cool. That's the only, like, that's who you are here, so, but anyway, Tony, it's so nice to be back.
Thank you for coming, and we are today talking about money management, basically. So how do we teach that in class, but also entrepreneurship? I don't think you could talk about money management in today's time without talking about entrepreneurship and finding those other ways outside of your 9-to-5, unless mm-hmm. you make a lot of money.
Right.
Most of us don't.
Right.
I don't think you could talk about money management without talking about entrepreneurship.
Yeah, I think the gig economy, which is what we've all lived in forever, and they finally came up with a name for it, right? But the gig economy, everybody having their side job, has become incredibly common for so many people. But I also think that teaching money management and entrepreneurship is important because I do think that a lot of our young people have a misconception about how easy it is to make money.
Oh, my goodness.
They just see what they see on social media, and mm-hmm. they don't really recognize how hard it is. So, yes, talking about it combined with money management is important, and it's a big part of my class. So fun.
I think it's important that we kind of share our own experiences with this kind of stuff. I know I've tried multiple things where you go, maybe I could get into this. I know I tried to sell t-shirts at one point. I was using Printify, I think it's called, like one of those websites mm-hmm. where you make up a name and try to get people to buy your stuff. Of course, nobody bought my shirts.
So, I'm sure they were super cool, but nobody could find them, right?
That too.
Because that's the problem.
Yes. So we all have like these cool ideas in our head, like, oh, right. This would be so cool.
Right.
But then obviously we start with our friends and family first, and you may have one or two people buy something. Then you're like, man, y'all are supposed to support me. No, they don't want your stuff either, you know,
right.
or maybe they don't have the disposable income, you know, to spend. I know for, you know, podcasting is going to be my escape plan, so to speak. But this is long term one of those things because it's a passion of mine.
Right.
So it's not just, okay, let me try to find something to make money.
Right.
That I'll just eventually throw away because I'm not really passionate about it. I don't actually want to do it. I just want the money from it.
Right. And I think that's a really important thing to teach kids. So from my perspective, I did own my own business before I became a teacher. Mm-hmm. And so ran a small real estate company, started out working with my mom, and then our business grew into sort of two different types of real estate. Mm-hmm. So we kind of split off and had two businesses running. And I did that for a while, and it's a lot of work to do everything that you really need to be doing as an entrepreneur, and that's a lot of what I try to teach the kids. But as far as side gigs, like, I've been roped into a couple of, you know, those, like, multi-level marketing things for
Gold,
friends.
Selling
like,
coffee.
Pampered Chef, right? So shout out to my Pampered Chef girl. No Amway. I'm smarter than that. I think my parents did Amway for a little while. I think they got roped into that. I never did essential oils. I didn't get on that bandwagon.
What about selling knives?
No, but I buy knives. Cutco knives are amazing.
Yeah.
I will tell you, they are some darn good knives. So we buy Cutco, but I don't sell Cutco. So anyway, we've just been giving a whole bunch of free advertising to people. Y'all need to be paying for this podcast. But yeah, so I think it's important because, well, I think there's two reasons. I think some kids think that they're just going to find one of these things to do and get rich quick, whether they have a passion for it or not. And then I think we have other kids who think that they're going to go to college, graduate, and they're going to suddenly all be making over $100,000 a year the first year they graduate, and they're not going to need this second gig. Like, I don't know. Like, it's kind of interesting the different thought processes that go through kids' heads today, because it's different.
Yeah, because of social media.
Yeah.
I would blame 100% of it on social media because they only see the results.
Right.
And then you have these people, whether they made a bunch of money or not, they're kind of telling you, they're not always telling you the process and how things suck sometimes and they don't work. And sometimes you do have things that work eventually, but it is a grind, like day after day, you know, loss after loss.
Right.
Before you ever make a dime.
Right.
Like, I can speak personally about podcasting. I have spent thousands of dollars.
And already. Hours.
And hours.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It is insane. But the part about business that you have to, that's important, is that you have to believe in what you're doing. Now, some people get lucky. You know, anybody that was a part of the dot-com bubble.
Right.
You know, a lot of those people maybe heard a friend say, hey, man, invest in this, jump in here.
Right.
And but those are like once in a lifetime type of deals. Like,
right.
That's not the norm.
No, it's definitely not the norm.
The norm is losing a lot of money.
Right.
And then failing and sometimes just completely cutting your losses.
Right.
Like we were talking about at lunchtime.
Yeah.
And just getting out of it.
Right. Right. Yeah, I think the they have no real clue because social media makes it look so easy and glamorous. And I'm just going to get on social media and talk about my product and everybody's going to love it and everybody's going to buy it and I'm going to make a bunch of money. Or I'm going to be an influencer. Like,
yes.
They have no idea how hard that actually is to be like the 10 people out there that are actually making millions and maybe the 100 people out there that are making, you know,
pennies.
Livable wages.
Livable.
And then the millions that are out there trying and making pennies or less than pennies.
Right.
Because they're spending money to try to get ahead, you know, by buying likes and things like that. So, I mean, it happens. So, yeah, it's fun to teach.
Yeah, how do you do it? You say...
I mean, how do I do it? So, like, to be clear, I don't actually teach an entrepreneurial class, right? I teach two classes. The first one is my principles in business, marketing, and finance. So we touch a little bit on entrepreneurship. It's a very short unit. It doesn't even really have any curriculum tied to it. It's an optional unit. And so we did a little bit this year, like, specifically on that, using an online kind of a simulation of a food truck. I'm going to build something different for next year. But I try to build in this concept of entrepreneurship into every unit we do because I feel like that is a piece that really kind of brings it home to them, right? So when we're talking about economics, we were talking about supply and demand, and we're talking about the different types of businesses, sole proprietorship, partnership, corporation, right? So when they think of sole proprietor, they think entrepreneur. That's cool. Fine. That's okay. Partnership, they think entrepreneur. Corporation, they think something different.
Right.
So anyway, so we played this prod. We did this project where they had to build paper airplanes and they had to sell them to me. And so we didn't get into all the marketing and stuff, but they had to do, as an entrepreneur, they had to do all the work themselves and try to sell me as many paper airplanes as they could in a class period. And so they recognized that being an entrepreneur was a lot more work than being a partnership or being a corporation, but that if they did it well, the rewards were higher.
Yes.
If they didn't do it well and they wasted their time, then they made very little money.
Right.
Right? So I built that into something that was really just supposed to be an economics lesson, mm-hmm. right? Like teaching the fundamentals of building, we were teaching the fundamentals of types of businesses,
yeah.
but building an entrepreneurship at the same time.
Right.
Right. We just finished a marketing unit in that same class. They weren't acting as entrepreneurs. They were acting as marketing directors for a nonprofit that was then doing a collaboration with a shoe company to create a sneaker that they could sell to raise money and to raise awareness for the nonprofit. So I had a lot of really great results, a lot of not so great results, but a lot of really good results.
Right.
But in doing that, they learned the basics of what it would mean to have mm-hmm. to do all the marketing of a product by themselves, right?
Yeah.
I made them do it all. They had to figure out the price. They had to figure out where they were going to sell it. They had to figure out how they were going to sell it. They had to give me sample social media campaigns, like the whole bit.
A lot of work.
So trying to fit those real world scenarios in to teach it, I think, is key because none of these kids want to learn from a textbook anymore.
No.
Like, whether that's right or wrong, it's just not the way to capture a teenager's mind, right? They'll have to do that as they get older and later. But for now, with the growth of their mind and the way their minds work, you know, I feel like we have to acknowledge that they need real-world application more than they need a textbook.
And that's where, because I think kids now understand money more than we
absolutely. Like, I'm nodding my head. Yes. They absolutely do.
So they know, like, about accounts. A lot of them, they know about credit cards. A good portion of them know about credit, you know, mm-hmm. and they are like, well, I want to trade, you know, currencies and these kind of things. Now, most of them don't know the depth of what that looks like.
Right.
But
they don't really know how to do it.
Exactly. It's in the zeitgeist. It's in their mind. It's out there. And they've watched videos and they've seen these other people talk about it. So, you know, I was concerned about video games when I was a teenager. Like, I had no idea. I knew when I was 16 I had to get a job.
Right.
But I didn't know, like, how much stuff costs. Yeah. I wasn't worried about money. I just wanted to buy shoes. Mm-hmm. And bought a new game when it came out.
Right.
That was it. But these kids they're talking about being entrepreneurs and they have like power washing businesses and those mm-hmm. kind of things. So when we can teach them stuff that will expand that, because that's a really good thing.
Right.
When we can teach them tools mm-hmm. to be able to use, whether they go into entrepreneurship or not, I think that they appreciate that mm-hmm. Because I think that I've had experiences, and I'm sure you have too, where they come back and they go, man, what you taught me helped me in this area when I started doing this thing.
Right.
Whatever that might be. And so if I was to be a part of the business, I would say I'm HR.
Yeah.
Because a lot of what I teach is communication, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then I teach a lot about how to work with people.
Right.
So whenever they're in groups and you can say I assign managers, you know, mm-hmm. who are my leaders in these groups, I'm always coaching them on, okay, if you have somebody in your group that's not doing their job well, how do you handle that? Because I'm not coming to save you. They're not getting out of your group. You're mm-hmm. not switching groups either.
Right.
So how do you now manage this partnership? How do you manage your corporation?
Right.
And what kind of leader are you going to be? Mm-hmm. You know, are you laissez-faire? Are you hands-off? All right, y'all do your job, whatever.
Right.
Are you an authoritarian?
Right.
Are you like, hey, I need this today at this time. This is what it should look like. And if it's not what it is, you know, now is there an issue? Mm-hmm. Are you the leader that just does everything because you don't trust anybody? I think we have a lot of those
kids. We have a lot of those kids.
Because they're so used to, okay, now if this is not good, it's going to affect my grade.
Right.
And now I'm screwed.
They're so grade conscious.
Yes.
Which is not good. Like, in the big scheme of things, it's not good. Although, you know, I go back and forth because mm-hmm. a lot of what you do as an adult is graded. Like, you're not getting an A and a B and a C and a D, but you're getting a review every year on a mm-hmm. job, and you know you need to do a good job in order to get a good review and things like that.
Yep.
In the corporate world, it is perhaps even more imperative that you do a good job in order to keep your job than where we are. Not that we're not required to do a good job. I'm not saying that. But it's just a different type of review process.
You can actually get fired
in corporate, yes. And so, you know, when I think of it that way, then you kind of have to equate the grades to what they're going to see in their future. Mm-hmm. But what I don't like is when it's all about the grades and not about the growth and not about what I'm learning.
Right.
But yeah, so, I mean, getting off topic, but there's so many things that we can teach them. So you feel like you're kind of like the HR department. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm more like maybe like the accounting and the finance department. I like the marketing department side of it because it's the creativity side. Mm-hmm. Like, I like teaching them that stuff. I had a couple of kids doing this sneaker project that they wanted to know how they could, like, download a picture of their celebrity and put their shoe on the celebrity. And I was like, you know, if this were a Photoshop class, I could teach you that because I can do that. But we don't have time for that right now. Like, you know, pretend. So, you know, but so I like the marketing, the creativity stuff. But probably, like, the accounting, finance, you know, that kind of side of the business would be, I guess, where I'm at.
Your jam.
Yeah. It's my background. It's my, I mean, I don't know if it's my jam, but it's my background. So that's like where the class is. But, you know, teaching them all this personal finance stuff, you said, you know, they're so much more savvy than we are. They're more surface savvy.
At this age.
Yeah. Yes. And the nice thing about that is they do have questions. And even my kids that are going out and getting their first jobs, mm-hmm. They know a little bit more about their paycheck than I did, than even my daughter did, but mostly definitely more than I did my first time. Like, they get their check and yes, they're shocked that taxes are so high out of their check, but they're not like completely clueless. Like, they knew it was going to happen.
It makes a huge difference, that background that you come from, because at the school that we teach at, mm-hmm. there are people who are walking these halls. They drive Teslas.
Yeah.
I don't know what their parents drive.
I don't either.
But they have very nice cars. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, we can't say that what you're driving gauges how much money you have. But if you don't have no money, you ain't getting a Tesla. I know that for sure.
Right. You know, it's interesting because you said we do have students very much that are like that. Mm-hmm. And I was, so today in my other class I teach is securities and investments, which is it's kind of misnamed. The first semester is all about investing. Our second semester is all about personal finance. It's all about this stuff. So we just finished our banking unit. We're going into budgeting. And so many of my kids are privileged, not from a financial perspective. I don't know what else is going on in their lives, but from that perspective. But I have a few that are not. And so we played a game today. We talked about different stages of life. And then we played an online game today that gives them the idea of what it would feel like to live paycheck to paycheck.
Oh, yeah.
That's what we were talking about at lunch. Mm-hmm. And so the goal of the game is to show them how hard it is. And obviously, the earlier you set yourself up for success, the better off you'll be and the lower the chances that you'll have to live paycheck to paycheck if you make the right decisions. But that also, things happen and things go sideways no matter how hard you plan.
Like your fridge.
And life gets tough. Like your dryer. Like your dryer no longer drying clothes.
Transmission.
Yes. Or your roof having a hole in it. We had all these stories at lunch. It was great. But these kids, like today, they were playing this game. And as they played, they were like, oh, my gosh. Like, I did the right thing. And it still turned out bad.
It's costing me.
Yeah. And I was like, what happened? I'm like, well, I got a speeding ticket. I'm like, well, okay, in the game. I'm like, well, hold on. That's not a good thing. Well, okay, I shouldn't have been speeding. But then I decided to fight it because I decided I wasn't really speeding. And so I fought it and I won. I'm like, okay. Like, so my fine was lots lower. Great. Good job. Well, then I lost my job because I missed work. And I said, and that's real life, folks. Yeah. Like, that's how it happens, especially for people who work an hourly wage. Mm-hmm. Because if you're not there to work your hours, they will find someone else to take your place. Yep. It is different, generally speaking, when you get into more of a salary-based role.
Right.
And so, you know, many of these students plan on going to college. They plan on having salaried mm-hmm. jobs with career, you know, kind of jobs. But things still happen.
Right.
Companies still close. Companies go under. People mm-hmm. lose jobs. The economy gets bad. It's hard to find a new one.
The economy changes.
The economy changes. Your job gets taken by AI. Who knows?
COVID.
Right. COVID. Right. And we've talked about that in class. So many people had problems during COVID and after COVID. And so it was really interesting, I think, for them to just see if they could make it 30 days in this really worst cased scenario. Mm-hmm. And only a handful of them made it 30 days, even trying their very best to make the right decisions. And so, you know, giving them like little things like that to try, which shout out to NGPF and Spent for that. So
shout out.
NextGenPersonalFinance.org, NGPF. They're amazing. Sorry, they're our free curriculum. They don't make any money. They're a nonprofit, so I don't feel bad shouting them out. Their whole goal is that every high school student in America should be required to take a personal finance course before they graduate. And they have helped 30 states pass that law. So we are not one of them, but
I hope we get there.
We'll get there. It'd be nice.
It's great that we offer a couple of classes.
Yes.
That talks about, you know, personal finance, mm-hmm. you know, all of the money and I think, what is it called? Money and sense or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great because a lot of people talk about, oh, we don't learn anything that we're going to use. I'm like, you don't even know what you're going to use. Okay, you're not out there
right.
yet.
Right.
And we had this discussion in class one day. I'm like, well, we don't even know how to pay bills. We should learn that. I said, paying bills is really easy. You log on online. Mm-hmm. You see how much you have to pay. You
and
put
you
in your card number and you press it. And if you have it on auto pay,
right.
you set it up one time and then you never even have to look at it again.
Right.
So I get what they're saying.
Yeah.
But a lot of this stuff is not necessary. The action of doing it is not complicated. But the behavior of knowing when to be disciplined with your money, like you said, you were a spender, but you had to learn how to be a selective spender.
Right.
Because it's not like you stop spending money.
Right.
But knowing when, knowing
and
where.
And when not to. And
when not right. to. What to buy, what not to buy, what can wait.
Mm-hmm.
Learning how to budget. Saying, all right, well, I don't have enough for this now, but give me a couple of weeks or give me a month
right.
or whatever. You save up and you buy that thing. So you spoke a little bit towards this, but I'll ask this question. How do you create it in an inclusive way, because like you said, not everybody is in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you find ways to make it equitable?
Right.
Because some kids probably go, well, dang, you know, if you start to use real numbers.
Yeah.
And you start to learn about people's actual situations.
Right.
Probably make some people feel
uncomfortable
on
both ends
least.
Of the spectrum, right?
Mm, yeah.
I have I'm not going to talk about students, but I have a class that is perhaps more financially diverse than my other class periods for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
And today when I was introducing this new unit of budgeting, the first question is, what do you spend your money on today? Like, as a high school student, the money you make in your job, if you have one,
right,
or if you still get an allowance, whatever you was your money that you can just spend for the heck of it, what do you spend your money on, right?
Probably and so got kids a lot of Starbucks.
It was you know, I got a little bit of Starbucks, but I got going out to eat with my friends, I have to pay for that. I got gas for my car, mm-hmm. I have to pay for that. And then I had one kid in this particular class period that said, gas. And I said, gas for your car? And he said, no, gas for my home, for my house, for my family.
Yep.
And I said, excellent, great example. And accepted it just like all the others.
Right.
And embraced it, right, yeah, as part of the situation. I have students that pay for their own insurance for their cars. Mm-hmm. I have some students who don't. I have some students pay for their own gas. Some students who have a credit card from mom or dad. Like, it's, yeah, a very, you know, different group. I think what I try to do is, like I said, like, embrace all those answers and, yes, that all of them are okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the next question on the slide was, now assume that you're a college student, what are you spending your money on? 99% of my class is going to college. Most of them already have their acceptance letters. I have one or two who probably aren't going,
right,
in this class. And so when I asked the question, it was on the board. I'd written it. It was my mistake. But when I asked it out loud, I said, let's assume you're 2 years from now, you're either in college or you're working, like, you know, full time, but maybe you're not all the way in your career yet.
Right.
What are you spending your money on? And so the things changed a little bit, but trying really hard to acknowledge that not everybody's coming from the same place,
mm-hmm,
and that not everybody has the same background. I also think it's important, especially in my class, to talk about my own experiences.
Yes.
So I've been very open with them. I told them today, and I told them I didn't care that they were going to backtrack and figure out how old I am, but I told them today, I graduated from college in 1989 with an accounting degree. I was in the top 5% of my class of accountants at A&M. I got hired by one of the big 8 accounting firms. It was like the job you wanted, right? So this was like top of the food chain in accounting, $26,500. I was rolling in it. Rolling in money.
Wow.
And that's how inflation has changed, right? I mean, that's a long time ago, but still. So I had my own apartment. I had my own car. I paid all my own bills. My parents didn't pay for anything for me. Mm. Now, we didn't have cell phones back then, right? And we didn't have, like, this is old school. We didn't have internet. We didn't have internet in our homes. Like, we just didn't.
You had your landline.
I had my landline. I did have that. We didn't have cable TV. Nope. Like, I didn't pay for any of that, but I still bought myself a brand new car when I graduated, which I did not need. I had a car that worked just fine, but man, I was like, I needed it, right? So I talk about that, like, not to brag to them, but to say, and yet 5 years later, I didn't have anything to show for it. Nobody told me about a 401k. Mm. Nobody told me to start putting money into savings. Nobody told me to start investing for my future, right?
Yeah.
So the whole point of being in this class is that no matter where you're starting from,
right,
even if all you can put aside is a dollar a week, $5 a week, that's better than $0 a week.
Yes.
Like, find a way to put it somewhere, mm-hmm, and hopefully put it somewhere where it will make you some money.
Yeah.
As soon as it's enough to put into an account, right? And so we talk a lot about that in my class, as, you know, like I said, you know, one kid in the same class, one kid's already investing. He doesn't have a lot of money. Like, I asked, like, I thought he had a lot of money invested in Tesla, right? And he told me he sold his Tesla. And I said, really? He's like, how'd you do? He goes, man, I made $50. Okay. So, like, I thought he was, like, you know, he was locked just investing, in, like, a little bit of his extra cash.
Yeah.
Online, right? He'd bought, like, partial shares in Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, he made $50 and he was, yep, excited about it. So, you know, he's like barely turned 18 and he's already making money on the stock market.
Yep.
Very cool. Like, just keep it up, man. I mean, that's part of why, kind of getting back to what I originally said, mm-hmm, like, trying to make this stuff real world is really critical and important.
Critical.
For these students, because there's so many other things that they can be distracted by and interested in. And some of them are doing and learning things online. I don't want to say that all social media is bad, right? I have kids that have gone on YouTube and learned how to do incredible things, mm-hmm, right? I have a kid who is raising chameleons.
Wow.
Yeah, like, literally his parents fronted him the money to invest, and he's been, like, raising chameleons from eggs. I think they're supposed to hatch next month. And it's an investment, but if he's able to sell all of these chameleons, it'll pay for his first year of college.
Wow.
Like, entrepreneur, right?
Entrepreneurship right there,
but
baby.
But so much of what he's doing, he's figured out how to do, mm-hmm. watching YouTube videos, learning on social media from other people who've done this. Mm-hmm. He knows which kinds of chameleons, which colors are going to sell better. He kind of knows, like how apparently you get better color, certain colors, depending on the heat that the egg is kept mm-hmm. at while it's incubating. And so he's
science,
like—
science right there.
Yeah, science, right?
No
so
idea.
Like he had no idea he was going to like put all this stuff to use. But he, so there's, it's not all bad, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a member on social media of groups related to hobbies, right? And I mm-hmm. get ideas and stuff. And I love Etsy and Pinterest for stuff. Like, it's not – Pinterest wants to be social, but it's not really social, but whatever. So, I mean, you know, it's not like I'm chatting with people. But so, I mean, we use it too.
Yeah.
We absolutely use it too. But for them, it's been ingrained in them now since they were
– yeah.
children.
And so as teachers, we're trying to turn it off, you know, right. for 45 minutes in our classroom.
Well, but seven teachers are trying to turn it off for 45 minutes, right? And that means that's like 7 hours of us expecting them to not be in yeah. touch with what they consider to be the real world. It's not going to happen.
The real world.
I know, right? Yeah,
the
that's
world
the real
is the
world.
People that you're sitting next
right?
to.
But to them, that's the real world.
That is.
Oh my gosh, did you see what happened? Oh my
crazy.
Gosh, did you hear? Like, you know? And so it's kind of, I mean, it is just as much a part of their real world as this.
That is a.
So we've been all over the place today, but like that fighting, is.
That is
not
a disturbing thought. That is. What's going on TikTok is just as much a part of the real world for them
mm-hmm.
as the people they're sitting next to.
Absolutely. It is.
Yeah, it's true. But that don't mean I gotta like it. If you were going to give a teacher some advice on integrating some real world application into their classroom, what advice would you give? And then I'll answer.
I think for me, it's being careful that what you try to add as real world is actually something they will care about.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping it relevant to teenagers, right? So like the sneaker project, they love sneakers.
Yes, they do.
I had tried to get them to sell, I don't know, probably anything other than sneakers, this would have been a complete dud of a project.
Eyeglasses.
Right. Like, they don't care, right? So, you know, coffee. Like, what? They would have been like, whatever. But because it's sneakers, right? So it's the only reason that the project works.
Mm-hmm.
So keep it relevant to them, not necessarily to yourself.
I would say share your own experiences with whatever real world thing that you're trying to bring. Okay. If you haven't experienced attached to it,
mm-hmm.
I think that they can go, oh, okay, that actually happened, not you making it up as teacher talk to
right.
try to get us to do some work.
That is very true.
So I always tell the story about my first car and then my second car. So my first car, it was a 2002 Malibu. It was silver, very plain, just...
And what year was
nonsense.
This? Just to kind of understand, was it a new 2000, like it was a new car? Was it 2002 when you got the 2002?
Absolutely not. This was 2006.
Okay.
What is it? Was it an 02 Malibu? Maybe. Now I'm second guessing myself.
Sorry.
It was a silver Malibu. And it wasn't that old, but it was old enough for me to afford.
Mm-hmm.
Me and my dad, we went to the auction and we got it. I think I paid for like... $1,500 of it, maybe it was $3,000. And I come home one day because I couldn't drive. I didn't have a license, so I couldn't drive it to school. And it wasn't there. So I called my dad, and he got into an accident, and the car was gone. And because we didn't have money for another one, I just never got another car.
Mm-hmm. See?
That sucks.
That sucks.
not my second car.
Because it wasn't even your fault.
It wasn't my fault. I had no idea. And I was just like, dang, like, I don't have a car anymore. And the worst part is he was like, okay, insurance money will come in. We'll get another one. We just never got another one. I didn't know what.
Yeah. The money just had to go to something else.
Exactly.
Because your family needed the money for something else more than it needed a car for you or
looking
whatever.
Back,
that's
I'm
what happened.
Sure that's what happened. Yeah. Because I remember the situation we were in at that time.
Yeah. Lessons we teach.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tony, Franklin, whatever I'm supposed to call you on this thing.
Whatever. As long as you call me. I'm sure we'll do it again soon.
That'd be great.
It's always fun having Zeit on and talking to her about really anything. And I'm sure we'll do it again. But before we get out of here, remember, financial literacy is invaluable knowledge that we all have experience with. Share your relevant stories with your students. It'll help empower them to make their own financial decisions, probably sooner rather than later. Also, integrating real-world applications into education is essential in helping students connect and apply their education. It helps the knowledge stick. As always, thank you for listening. Keep teaching, keep learning, and I will see you all on the next journey.